This is Talk Is Sheep, the official podcast of the Wild Sheep Society of BC, brought to you by Sitka Game. Come along as we bring conversations that matter to you into the high alpine. This episode is sponsored by our conservation partner, Frontiersman Gear. Thank you, Sitka Gear and Frontiersman Gear, for investing in healthy wildlife and sustainable ecosystems.
So, how's it going, Nolan?
Oh, Greg, things are going good, man. Rain's hitting us out here in Chilliwack, and hey, getting excited for summer, though, at the same time.
We got a surprise little blast of winter today, so woke up and let the dogs out, and one of the dogs came back in and jumped in my bed, and he was covered in snow, so it was a good surprise at 5 in the morning. I'm like, oh, huh, that's cool. So, but it's already all gone, so it's not a huge deal, but it was a reminder of where we live.
Exactly. A quick little Prince George dusting in the morning, eh? So there you go.
Yeah, for sure. So let's dive into it a little bit about you. So who are you? Where are you from? What's going on with you?
Yeah, my name is Nolan Schneider. I'm co-owner in Far Gone Films, which I think is kind of what we're here to chat about today. But other than that, I'm a film producer. Kind of for the last couple of years, Nick and I have partnered on Far Gone and have just been really focused in the hunting and fishing space. Far Gone itself specializes or kind of works in three different avenues, commercial films, where we'll do different product launches or work with different brands within the hunting and fishing space, kind of on more of the commercial side. But then we also do brand films, did a big one with First Light Hunting a few years ago called Land of Legend. And then now do original films too. So just had Subsistence launch here today, actually. And that's kind of like our original side. So that's a little bit about Far Gone, how we operate. Based out in Chilliwack, British Columbia. Love every second of it. And yeah, man, things are good. Can't complain. That's a bit about me.
There you go. That's the broad overview of Nolan.
That's the sales pitch.
That's the sales pitch. That works. It works. It works. So what kind of, like, what led you into the outdoor media company? Like, I've followed you guys online for a few years, and, you know, you guys produce a lot of great stuff. But you seem to have this eye, like, it's in you. Like, the outdoors is in you. Like, what kind of led you down that road to, you know, get into the outdoor media space? Because that's not an easy space to make it in.
Yeah, no, it is true for sure. So I would say Nick and I's story. Nick is the guy that actually founded Far Gone. And then I came in a little bit later. Our stories are slightly different. But I think to answer your question, honestly, just a lot of passion. Like, especially kind of over the last year or so, both Nick and I have really, I would say, turned it up to 100 in regards to for our love for the outdoors. I think we've just been able to try to strengthen our knowledge by surrounding ourselves with different people that honestly know a lot of things. And within that, like, when you're around passionate people, obviously that kind of like exudes into yourself as well. For myself, kind of, I guess, like my deep interest in hunting, I always had an interest in hunting growing up. But I didn't necessarily have, I would say, the people around me to take me out. I remember being in like maybe middle school and begging my friends' parents that were hunters just to be like, hey, like, can you please take me out? Like, I'll do anything. Like, I just really want to have like the hunting experience. And honestly, never really was successful in that, because a lot of obviously people are coveting of their spots, which I understand, and all of this different stuff. But I would say from there was kind of like my first real interest. And that kind of carried. And then maybe around 17, 18, got introduced to duck hunting and waterfowl hunting, and was working on a potato farm later in the years. And we had a blind out. So kind of before the shift, would go out in the blind and shoot a couple ducks, go work the day on the potato farm, drive the tractor, and then come back out after work too and get a little bit in the blind after. And I say, like, through that and just being able to get interested in it, then obviously you get older, you get your license, and then you and your buddies just going and getting skunked weekend after weekend, just trying to figure out whatever. And I don't know, I think it all kind of is morphed us on this hunting journey. And then I actually got married, and my wife and I started to really ask the questions about, like, where our food comes from. And those different pieces. And also I started to learn how to cook in different ways. And I think that, and then also, reading different blogs, even on like conservation efforts, everything, I think just kept pushing us down this hunting path. Then ended up partnering with Nick, and here we are today making hunting and fishing films for a living. So can't complain.
No, that sounds like, I want to say almost a dream job, like not capable of it, but it sounds really, you're out there doing what you love to do and, get to put a bit of money in your pocket while you do it. So it's, put those in the win columns. So were you,
it definitely is. I'd say it's a lot more emails than everyone would like to think, and a lot less time in the field than we like to post on Instagram. But, yeah, man, like we wouldn't have it any other way. We're super stoked to be where we are. And like I said, it all comes from a passion too and a desire to make it happen. So.
Oh, right on. Now, did you have any, Nick's your partner. Was he kind of like a big influence in getting, like pushing you into this space, or was that like you wanted it and you kind of just kind of met each other and went from there?
Yeah, it was pretty much that. Like Nick was already doing kind of the hunting and fishing, or just strictly the hunting stuff. He, couple guys invited him out on a sheep hunt. And that's essentially what founded Fargon. Was just, he was working for a media company out in Abbotsford, got invited out on this sheep hunt, and pretty much was like, hey, this is a great opportunity for me to hone my skills and also get to experience something like a sheep hunt, right? So he kind of jumped in on there and then started making essentially what Fargon was. But that was pretty much it. It was just like, hey, every once in a while I get approached to do a film, no real payment or anything like that. It was just more of a passion type of thing. And then my side, I was working for some other media companies, more on kind of like the commercial side of things. Definitely not in the hunting industry or anything like that. Just doing all of your mainstream commercial, and actually went and produced a fishing TV show for a little bit and different things like that. But then, like I said, when I started going down the personal journey of hunting, I obviously was looking at different people in the space, ended up meeting Nick in a hot tub of all places at a buddy's place, shared a beer. And from there, we just kind of hit it off and had a couple more beers over some meetings. And long story short, decided to partner on the business and say, hey, what would this look like to actually take this full time? And I think from there, when those conversations started to happen, then we just dove right in. And like I said, too, accompanying with those different things that were happening in my life and the wantingness to start to learn how to cook or do all these different things too, it just continued to push us down on, this is all we're thinking about. Like, I remember when I first started getting into the mindset of black tail hunting, that's what somebody would always say. They're like, hey, you know what? Like, you're going to go black tail hunting with a bow. You're going to think it's a good idea at first, and then it's just going to take over your head. And every single thing that you think about is just going to be all retained to black tail hunting. And that's kind of what happened with us. And doing that in a business on a 9-to-5 just expedites that process.
Yeah, well, it sounds like you might have one of the rare occasions where a good decision comes from a few beers in a hot tub.
No, nothing. Yeah. All good things come from a hot tub and a bunch of men just hanging out. So,
yeah, the beer always, you know, that adds that extra. Was it a good idea? But it seems like it's working out, so that's good.
Hey, yeah, it's a great time. So,
did you have any other mentors leading you into this?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say mentors in the hunting space, like strictly on the media side of things. But I think both Nick and I have mentors and continue to act in mentors with, from like the filmmaking side of things. Like I said, I come from commercials and different things from that end. And I think I started that in 2017. So have a lot of the mentors that established us, especially on like the storytelling side of things. And Nick has those same guys too. But I would say on the hunting side of things, honestly, the people that we get to showcase really teach us a lot along the way. Like a guy like Justin Balzer or Grizz, who we got to, we're fortunate enough to spend the last year with. Honestly, man, like just sitting back and filming this guy, I'm like, I'm learning things left and right, which is pretty amazing. And everything from tactics to going all over the place, or like a big one for me too, is just like not beating a dead horse in regard to spots and being like, hey, you know what? Like things are moving. Like, why don't we go and move? And I would say like our hunting mentors really come from the people that we're like actually filming. And fortunate enough to, I don't know, I think when you're spending a week, 10 days, couple months with a dude in the bush, right? Like you're just going to be chatting. And when you're hunting, that's probably a thing you're going to be chatting about. And I don't know, I think you learn so much from that. So I would say in the hunting industry, it was definitely the guys that were fortunate enough to go out and shove a camera in their face and say smile. So
yeah. Do you find it hard to kind of balance your personal passion for the outdoors activities and running the demands of running a business at the same time, or you figuring out a way to kind of tie them together and make it an all work?
I would say that's a constant struggle. I think especially kind of like looking at last year, we hit it really hard from the Fargon perspective, but I think I definitely like ended up the season and being like, you know what, like, there was a lot of trips that I had to say no to that I would have really liked to say yes to. And those are just personal trips of me and my childhood buddies who have all really got into hunting in the last couple of years, going out and doing things like that. I would say last year I missed out on a lot of that, and I'm hoping to change some things moving forward. So that's an ongoing struggle, something that we're figuring out kind of as the business evolves and grows. And I'm hoping for this year to log off some days where it's like, hey, you know what, maybe we have three or four projects in the books, and that's what we're going to go shoot. We love telling stories that we're passionate about, and our whole goal as a company is to try to bring more of a storytelling approach to all the films we do, whether that's commercial work or even things down to like original films, right? Our goal is to really try to tell the stories within and not always necessarily the biggest buck or the, whatever it is, right? And I think with that, our kind of goal moving forward is, hey, let's pick like two or three stories that we feel like the world needs to hear, obviously within the hunting and fishing space, and let's focus on those and maybe save a couple other times for us to just personally get on out and make things happen too, so. Yeah, like I said, I think that's an ongoing struggle, and looking forward to changing a couple things this next year and hopefully getting a few more steaks in the freezer.
Yeah, there's gotta try to have that balance. And I guess it's gotta be kind of interesting for a guy like yourself where you're out there in that space, you're out in the woods, you're along on these epic journeys, but they're not your journey, so to speak. So it's like, It's gotta be like a little bit of an internal struggle. Like, I want to be doing this, but I'm working at the same time.
Yeah, it's definitely internal struggle for sure. That being said though, like I feel almost we find like what we go to bed dreaming at night is telling like a story that we feel like will impact people's lives. Like that's truthfully it. That's the stuff that literally wakes me up at 2 a.m. in the morning and I'm ripping open to the notebook and writing down like, oh, it'd be cool to like hear someone's life on this and like document this through a hunt or all these different things, right? So those are the things that we go to bed dreaming about. And I don't know, I think we get so much satisfaction about seeing someone accomplish these things too, right? So I don't know, like, yeah, there could be a little bit of personal stuff there, but if I'm honest, I don't necessarily feel like I'm always the person. I don't feel like I have to be the one that's pulling the trigger or letting that arrow fly, right? It's like, I get so much satisfaction about watching somebody do that and being like, wow, we got the shot. Like, people are going to be able to see this and hopefully, like, the storyline is going to resonate with someone and maybe change some lives too in that regards too, so. Yeah. That being said too, it also helps like that the last couple hunts this last year, we shared all the meat too. So that helps too when you're also like, hey, you know what? If buddy gets an elk down, I got half a freezer full of elk meat. So there you go.
Now, what they did they make you pack anything?
Oh yeah.
Besides your camera. You're here, put a quarter in your back. Let's go.
Honestly, I don't think we would ever be invited back on a hunt if we were not the pack mules. Like, I think that's just a rite of passage in hunting filmmaking. It's like, if you're not willing to pack out a couple quarters and honestly share your load with everyone else, I don't think you're invited back. So, yeah. Hey, at the end of the day, we want to be invited back next year to tell that an even epicer story, right? So you best believe we're throwing a couple pack loads out and putting the cameras away when we need to and just getting that sweat on.
Yeah. Well, we'll dive into it a little bit here, but yeah, you guys, you definitely had your opportunities to put the work in on that, those trips. But, so let's lead with, you got this film Sustenance out that launched today. So, you know, we're, this podcast, when it airs, it'll be about a week. So it's, you'll have the full on everything, but I had the opportunity to watch it last night and, you know, it was captivating, but you guys did such a great job of telling the whole story. There was no, like, there's, you're talking about the not success, you're talking about the fishing, you're talking about the family, you're talking about this, you're talking about that. Like, what inspired you and your team to create that film? Like you were just sitting down one day and we're like, that's a cool idea, but I'm assuming it was a lot more than that, because the span of the film is an entire year. So, and you're dealing with a guy like Justin Balzer, who I don't really know him personally. I know of him, follow him on Instagram. But he seems like a fly by the seat of the pants kind of guy. So are you just waiting at his beck and call? Like, hey, we're going to do this now.
Oh yeah. No. Hey, well, thank you for saying that. I'm glad that you liked it. And, yeah, honestly, like we really tried to accomplish a lot of those things for the film. So thank you for saying that. We appreciate that. But honestly, the storyline for Subsistence, honestly, was something that Nick and I were very early on in our business partnership. And maybe this was like close to 2 years ago now that we kind of started thinking about this idea. And Nick and I were on a fishless afternoon. Just kind of chatting, trying to figure out like what we're doing. You can call us fishing, but we might've just been sitting on a boat, hanging out for the most part and not catching anything. But anyways, yeah, we started chatting about like what like a subsistence lifestyle looks like, especially in a modern day. Like you always think about people living off the land and you think about people in the middle of the mountains of Montana or something and just like way out there and, really like disconnected from society. But we kind of just started chatting about, first of all, that we feel like a lot of people have like a disconnect to meat, and people think that a meat is a piece of steak on a styrofoam plate that's vacuum sealed, and they don't necessarily realize that there's a whole life and a story behind it. And we think that that's a little bit of a heavy thing that I think we should all carry a little to some extent, right? But at the same time too, trying to figure out like what does this look like to maybe live the subsistence lifestyle, which essentially means to provide for oneself or their family off of the land. What does it look like to live like that in a modern era with somebody who works a 9-to-5 job, in Justin's case, 10 to 12 hours a day, who has a family and who lives within city limits. And Nick and I just started chatting about this idea. And then all of a sudden he was like, hey, you know what? I know a guy through Instagram and he goes by the name Grizz. He lives this lifestyle. Like we should like reach out to them, grab beers and see kind of how things go. And that's essentially what we did. And, realized that I actually knew Justin way back in the day, like kind of growing up, but obviously never knew him as Grizz. And, that's kind of where we just started chatting. And it turns out like Justin lives this authentic subsistence life. He hasn't bought meat in well over 10 years, works a job 9-to-5. But at the same time, like weekend warrior style, like goes out and harvests all of his meat after work. He's pretty much trying to like end a job site that's the closest to the river so that he can quickly cast a line and try to catch dinner. And, yeah, honestly, it just kind of fit. So from there, we went and started the pre-production phase, got a couple sponsors on board that honestly, at the end of the day, kind of just pretty much paid for gas. Like, we really viewed this as like a passion project, but a story that we felt like we really wanted the world to hear, and maybe in some ways make a case for hunting and fishing and outdoor harvest, and why we think that's important lessons to pass on to the next generation. But at the same time, from a conservation perspective on why we need to protect these species that we do, got a couple sponsors on, and then pretty much went off and started filming the year-long production. So started off on a nice fishing trip, and first time for me seeing the Northern Lights, which was a special experience, and caught a couple fish, brought home some full coolers, and honestly from there, like the storyline for the film just kind of wrote itself. And pretty much we just followed around Justin for a whole year with stuff that he honestly does every single year. So there's nothing really special for him. But for Nick and I, it was something that we were definitely in shock by. And first of all, just the vastness of how much this guy harvests and how much time this guy spends out in the field regardless. But like I said, too, like how he does it with a mindset that is, hey, like, I want to be able to pass on these lessons to my kid, Fraser. I want her to know the value of where her meat comes from. But I also want her to learn that, like, hey, like, this is a sensitive thing in some ways, and we need to learn how to protect this too. So from there, we just went on for the year, and honestly, it was something pretty special.
I guess you'd call him the main character. Like, you guys nailed it with picking him. Like, from the very first fish he catches, like, you're captivated. it's kind of neat. It's neat for me because, you know, I don't know where Justin lives, but I can tell by watching some of it that, you know, I grew up relatively near him, and you know, watching that film, and I'm like about 11, 12, 13 years ahead of him right now with my kids. So I was doing those same things, just getting him out as young as I could. And like, it's neat to watch because, you know, a lot of people don't realize how many people in that lower mainland actually, well, they might not be as successful as Justin, but they strive to do that. Yeah. And it's not an easy task to pull that off. Like, hats off to him, and, you know, hats off to you guys for being there along the ride. Like, could you even throw a dart at a dartboard and take a guess at how many hours in the field you had to spend with them throughout the year? Like, it was...
Oh my gosh, it was quite a few. It was definitely quite a few. Like, there were some trips, honestly, or days out that we caught stuff, but honestly just didn't make it in the film. Like, there was a lot of stuff that didn't end up making it in there. But yeah, it was... I don't know. Well, we had over 14-day trips up, or yeah, it was a lot of time. That's a lot of time. But that's got to be cool, though, too. Even, like, you said something pretty amazing. Like, it's got to be cool, too, to be a father and see those values that you've kind of instilled in your kids. Like, how has that journey been, just out of curiosity? Like, how has that journey been for you? And especially, too, to, like, how old are your kids now? Or?
13 and 12. So it's...
cool.
But they're all in.
Oh, I love it. In. They've bitten into the image of it, and they're ready to go, eh?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm like, my son is fly fishing is his life. Like, if we're going out hunting, he's got his rod, or he sneaks his rod, and, you know, doing the same thing you guys are doing in the film as you're on your way hunting. Yeah. You see a stream and you're pulling over to catch fish. My son's like, that one's got to hold fish. There's a pool there. Like, let's pull over. I got flies.
So
like,
good.
You got your rod and your flies? Like, what are you talking about? How did you get those in the truck without me knowing?
Greg, you're raising your kids right, man. I love it.
Yeah. Trying to, anyways. Doing a damn good job at pretending sometimes. No. So, yeah. So was there, like, when you were leading into the film, was there, like, because you've talked about it for a couple of years before you actually got into the process and the development and filming and going from there, but did you, once you started, were you able to follow kind of your vision for the film, or was it just free flowing with Justin and you kind of decided your themes and the messaging you're going to convey through the film as you were going? Or
yeah, it was a little bit of both. It was definitely a little bit of both. Obviously, as like a production company, we have to do our due diligence to make sure that we're obviously going to be able to capture the things that we need to capture. Obviously, through different interviews, we're going to try to ask conveying questions that's hopefully going to evoke the emotion, like, or evoke the emotional responses that we're hoping to get. But at the same time, though, like, we're in the business of trying to tell authentic stories. So much of us is just trying to walk around and letting Grizz do his thing, letting him live the life that he lives, right? Like, we're not getting him to act or do anything differently. We might ask him to do maybe one more interview take. But for the most part, it's essentially what he's already doing. So a lot of it, obviously, we planned out trips. We had an idea coming into the year of what harvest we would like to go after. We asked Justin, like, hey, like, what do you do on an average year? We want this to be authentic to you. And he pretty much laid out, he's like, hey, you know what? In this season, I go after, or in ice off, I'm obviously going after a trout, still water. And then obviously that goes into the different salmon runs and all this different stuff kind of as the years go on, or as the seasons go on. Then obviously fall, September, we're going after elk, transitions into deer, and then different things like that. So we kind of followed a bit of a timeline, but at the same time, Grizz is just like the guy that's out there every freaking day. Like, I do not understand how that guy does it. Like, he has stories about hiking cup locks with his, they had their first kid, and he's got a kid maybe a month old strapped to his chest out spring bear hunting. I'm like, man, like, this is insane. So he's just a guy that gets after it. And we would get a lot of text messages saying like, hey, heading out for the afternoon, you guys around, like, let's go film something. And there's a lot of stuff that we said no, just strictly, you know what, dude, we got to put our feet up and take a nap here. But yeah, so it was a little bit of both, some planning. But at the same time, like, obviously bigger trips, you got to plan out and people got to take work off and make all of that stuff happen. But at the same time, a lot of it was just letting that guy fly. And honestly, a guy like Grizz, you do not want to contain. You just want to let him roll. Maybe he gets a little bit of Buffalo Trace in him, which is his favorite. Then he just starts yapping and he's just a joy to freaking watch. And honestly, for us to sit back and yeah, just let that guy go. Honestly, that dude needs to like have like a comedy show or something. So, but he's also knowledgeable too, right? Like, and especially to Scotty, his partner, like is a DFO officer and knows so many different things about even like the plants and foraging. And like, you'll walk in the woods with her and she'll just bark your ear off with everything and how like, oh, this certain plant you can use for all these different teas or all this different stuff. So through years of them just getting out all the time, they obviously have this deep knowledge as well. So, and they're just freaking Energizer bunnies. So you so just let them run and point a camera at them.
So they force you to get in better shape throughout the year then, or?
Yeah, big time. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, definitely.
What would you say? Oh, it's kind of might be a loaded question, but what would you say would be kind of like some of the challenges you faced on a production like this? Like, it's long. You're dealing with people, with careers. You're dealing with animals. You're dealing with fish, and not all of those things want to cooperate.
Yeah, it's true. It's definitely true. Honestly, I think the biggest thing, like with any long project, is just like the burnout, right? And I think like for us too, yeah, having that long-term vision in mind is something that you just got to constantly check yourself on. And you got to like be like, hey, you know what? Like, I don't know, it's easy to embark on a project and say, yeah, we're going to do this. And then 2 weeks in, be like, yeah, you know what? Like, we kind of had a crappy trip. Boys got skunked. Like for us, for example, like a brook trout all year, I cannot tell you how many freaking times we went after brook trout. And it was the last trip of the whole year, it was January. The film was coming out in March. So it was like the last thing we filmed after going out for brook trout like 10 times and finally caught one, a single brook trout, which is typically kind of like one of the go-tos for Justin. So I don't know. I think when it's like things like that and you're obviously putting in the time and just can't control any of the elements with that stuff. And I think for us, it's just really like self-monitoring. I think Nick and I just both encouraging each other. When I'm feeling burnt out, I rely on Nick to kind of encourage me through and remind me the reasons why we're putting so much time and energy into a film like this. And when Nick's burnt out, trying to do the same thing for him. I think that's the biggest challenge, is just avoiding burnout and looking at the bigger picture in mind. And for us, like I said, it was to try to tell a captivating story that hopefully resonates with some people. And for us, we were like, hey, you know what, if a couple people get involved in conservation and if a couple people like get their eyes open to partaking in the outdoors, like I feel like our job was accomplished there. And we hope that takes place throughout the film. But I think that was like our big goal in the end of it. And that's kind of what we just kept having to remind ourselves throughout the long production.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny you mentioned the brook trout, because, you know, if someone listens to this before or after, it adds a little bit more clarity on the sheer excitement Justin had when that fish came through the ice. He was jacked right up, and I was like, oh, I was a little bit excited over a brook trout, like just this guy who hammers fish for every day, but now it all adds up.
That being said, though, with Justin, like I said, that dude's just such a freaking energizer bunny. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. Like, that guy is right fired up constantly, and it's a joy to be around. It's contagious. It really makes you think, like, man, you go out duck hunting, you get one duck, you're like, this dude, like, is thinking he just won the freaking lottery. Most guys would be out like, oh, you know what, bit of a slow day, you know, like, oh, maybe we caught one trout, but I don't know, that guy just loves it. So, yeah, there was definitely a big sigh of relief, and I hope people notice that when they watch the film when he caught that brook trout, just because it was a solid, like, 7-8 months of us constantly trying to go after brookies and just getting skunked after skunked after skunked. But at the same time, too, that guy just gets stoked over a freaking pine cone dropping, too, so.
There you go. So, I guess that was, what would be kind of like your most, I'm just asking big questions here because I'm curious, but what would be kind of like your most memorable, your most memorable moment of the production? Because I'm sure it's full of a bunch, but like there's a lot happens in this film. So it's,
a lot does, for sure. I think there's a couple memorable sections. One, maybe I'll give you two here. The first one, I would say, kind of hurts my heart a little bit at the same time, if I'm being honest. But at the same time, makes it pretty memorable too. And every time I watch the film, gets me super stoked. So here's a little behind the veil scene for you. This last year, like I said, I didn't get out on very many hunts kind of beyond the film. But I was on a very huge mission for a local blacktail deer. And this was something that I have, I feel like every blacktail hunter just, you put in a lot of hours. And for me, I kind of like during the season, every day before work would get on out, find my local zones, kind of got a couple different zones figured out. I was just putting a lot of time in. For us, for the film, we got skunked on whitetail. It was just a super weird year. We felt like with the snow and all this stuff and the whitetail weren't really moving kind of in the zones that Justin's typically able to see the whitetail move in. And we felt like, first of all, Justin was like, hey, you know what, after these elk, my freezer's only half filled, so I definitely need to get another big game animal. But then also me from the producer side thinking like, I think the film needs another big game animal here too. So we were like, hey, you know what, last ditch effort, let's go out and go for blacktail deer. So like I said, I prefaced that stuff that these are zones that I've been hunting all year round. And kind of how we made it happen was, I myself was out there with the bow. put the camera down that day and was like, hey, you know what, Justin, like, here's a zone I've been working out pretty good. Like, why don't we come and get out for a little bit of a hunt here? Anyways, after work, he comes on out. We go try out this local zone, and we're kind of like hunting like different fingers kind of along like a hillside type of thing. And long story short, we're maybe, he's 100 yards up. I'm taking the low line. I'm with my bow. He's with his rifle. And we're just kind of like still hunting through, obviously, have our lanes on like where we're going to hopefully get something. And we're kind of like, hey, you know what? Like, first guy comes and gets it. So we're walking down, walking through. And all of a sudden, I find this one zone, and it's like rub, 10 feet, rub, 10 feet, rub. And like things are pretty fresh. There's a bunch of fresh crap everywhere. Ground's all ripped up. And I'm like, oh, boys, like we're freaking in one here. No one, like Justin's 100 yards up there. Nick's obviously filming Justin. And I'm like, you know what? Like things are going to go pretty good here. Like this is what I've been waiting all season for. Like we're in the honey hole. And you know when your heart just starts beating, right? So I'm coming down, and long story short, I'm still hunting, and I pull up my binos, and all of a sudden I just see like a little tick of a flick of an ear, and there's this doe. I'm like, hey, you know what? Well, if there's a doe, there might be a buck around. Kind of sit there, wait 10 minutes, long story short, find this neck, and it turns out to be this beautiful 3x3 buck, wide beyond the ears. For blacktail, it's just something that like something I've definitely been dreaming about. Range him, I'm at 60 yards. I'm like, okay, not maybe the greatest shot. I'm going to try to cut the distance. He's looking the other way. Like, I got all the time in the world. Might as well go and make something. So I cut the distance down to 30 yards. Perfect broadside shot. Knock my arrow. I'm hiding behind a tree. Pop my release on. Go to pull back. Walk out. And then I just hear bang. And this buck just goes 30, 40 feet and just drops. And I just look up the hillside and I just see Grizz, the biggest freaking smile on his face, just so stoked. And obviously, like, I'm fired up from the producer side of me, right? Because I'm like, hey, you know what? Like, I feel like this is the bow that this film needed. I've been stressed. I've been keeping up at night thinking, you know what? Like, this film needs another big game animal. But at the same time, obviously, I've also been keeping up on the other odd nights, being like, oh, nice new buck in my freezer would be something pretty cool too. So anyways, that's a story that I think I'll never forget, because I remember it really like brought up like the internal quandarying of like the producer side in me, but then also like the internal hunter in me too. And for Justin, obviously, like he's like, yeah, I was still hunting. Popped up, and I just popped over the corner, and I just see this buck, and obviously with a rifle you can act a little bit quicker than you can with the bow. So he's like, I just popped it, and obviously he had a beautiful heart shot, and that thing died quickly. And you know what, it tasted real freaking good at the same time. So I think that's a story I'm never going to forget, but that's a little bit of a behind the veil story that from production that I think something pretty special. And like I said, for me, being a producer and feeling that internal quandering of like, one side, we're making a film here, and I really feel like we need another big game animal just to make this film epic. On the other side, like, I'm a hunter, and obviously when you're chasing a blacktail all year and to finally get that opportunity and think, you know what, another 2 seconds could have been there. But the other one too, honestly, like I said at the beginning, something I'll never forget is just the Northern Lights being on full display that one night when things got cold. And honestly, that was kind of like the point where we're like, you know what, it's going to be on tomorrow, just strictly because we're out elk hunting. It was a hot year, like big time for us kind of up where we were hunting. And yeah, and there was no movement the first couple days. Ran into a couple cows, which were open, but obviously wanted to wait until a bull came across, especially when you're up there for a week and a bit. Yeah, as soon as the temperature dropped, the Northern Lights were just in the biggest display I feel like I'll probably see in a long time. Just something that makes you just sit back, drop your jaw, and just be like, man, God's beauty is something pretty amazing. And then obviously the next day we had a doubleheader at Bull Harvest too. So those are two memories I think I'm never going to forget about production on this film. So, and obviously the partnership, the friendships and stuff that you make along the way too is something pretty special.
So you don't got to answer this question honestly if you don't want to. When you hear the bang, what's the first thought in your head? Are you like, you son of a bitch?
I can honestly say I was fired up. That thought did come in about 2 minutes later though. But my initial thought, like I said, like I was stressing about us not being able to, first of all, Grizz got skunked on mule deer and then we got skunked on the whitetail. And like I said, like the producer in me was stressing. So it was a huge sign of relief. But then, like I said, about 2 minutes later, I was like, you know what? And then especially coming up to that thing and seeing the rack on it for a blacktail and being like, you know what? That thing would have been pretty sweet too. So,
yeah, it was, that's a nice buck. Like, you don't get, too many blacktails that heavy. So that's a,
yeah. Hey, you know what? There's always next year.
The poor salt in the wound there.
You know what? I'm over it. Like I said, looking at it in the film, it makes it something pretty special. Every time I look at there, I go, you know what?
Now, did
it's
he,
a lot better than if I got it.
Yeah. Did he give you a little extra cut of the meat at that point too? Is he like, here's some, I feel bad, you have a tenderloin.
Oh yeah, I wish. No, he cooked up some nice steaks for us for sure.
Perfect. Well, he like, looks like he likes to cook on the fire, and there's no better way to have fresh meat is on that fire. So,
it's so.
And then the Northern Lights, like,
oh, I don't know. Say, yeah, I said,
your Northern Lights. If that, we're going back and forth.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, yeah, cooking up that elk, over the fire. One scene that didn't make it in the film, kind of at like the very end, was obviously just cooking up that elk heart over the fire is something pretty amazing. And for guys that have not experienced that, I just think once you put your blood, sweat, and tears going after these animals, and for us, we were probably putting on close to 30K a day type of thing. And it's like, once you finally are able to accomplish something like that, just cooking that heart, which is just this amazing tasting food over a fresh fire with your buddies and the beer in hand and just, I don't know. If you haven't experienced that, it's something special.
Yeah, I'll second that. That it's, for some reason, organ meats often overlooked, or it's, or when people do cook it, they just put way too much thought and effort into it. It's like, keep it simple, over the fire, like fresh at camp. Like all the organ meat in camp on the fire is like, you get that extra energy boost. It's delicious. It's, I don't know. That's something. But the heart's a good one to get a little sear on and cook over the fire. But you're talking about the Northern Lights, and you know, you've seen, that was your first time, and you guys got a pretty good show for your first time. Like, that's not, that might even be a once in a lifetime show, because you had all the colors.
Oh, it's so true. That was actually my second. My first time was going on our first ice off trip. The first trip that we filmed for this film was the first time seeing him, but. Yeah, so that one on the elk hunt was the second, but I don't know if anything's going to freaking top that. That was just something so special. And honestly, just the snaps and things going back and forth is just a symphony in the sky. You can't beat it. Like I said, and for a guy like me who's grown up in British Columbia his whole life, like, I don't know, I've always felt sad that I feel like I haven't experienced that. And it wasn't for a lack of trying. It's something that I've definitely like kind of just daydreamed about and tried to put myself in the right positions to be able to see him, but just never really happened. So like I said, that's an experience that truthfully I'll never forget. And it's pretty sweet too, to be able to have it on film and be like, hey, you know what? Anytime I want to relive that, I don't even have to look at the brain. I can just chuck on the old YouTube and make her happen.
Yeah. It's kind of neat when a moment like that can, can live forever, and you can, you know, transplant yourself back there and just imagine what it's like to be sitting there watching it again, sitting around the fire with the boys. And
for sure,
why we love what we do, right?
It's so true. We got to get out here in British Columbia, that's for sure.
It's amazing, you know, if you're in the Lower Mainland, and I'm born and raised there, and what people don't realize the rest of the province is like you're not going to get that Northern Lights show down there. You're not going to, eventually you're going to start seeing more elk down there because they're showing up all the time now, but even ice fishing, you're not doing that in the Lower Mainland. The closest place you're going is probably like Coquihalla Lakes or something. Like you're a couple hours away before you can enjoy it.
It's so true. That's honestly what I love about BC though too, right? Like, I don't know. I think it's such, and now I'm just going into why I love BC rant. So everyone might want to turn this one off here, but I don't know. I just think it's so special to be able to, like, even for us kind of in the Lower Mainland, like within a couple hours, we can get into so many drastically different climates, and to be able to experience these different things and have these different corners of the province just offer such drastic different in regards to even activities and everything along those. I think we live in a pretty special place. At least I'm going to tell myself that until the day I die. And there you go. If you don't believe me, more space for me.
Yeah, it definitely has its special moments.
For sure.
So we'll jump back to the film a little bit here. And when you guys came up with the idea and you've done all the work, did you know the whole time you're going to be giving back with this film? Like, cause you guys gave us I guess that was your premiere. You know, you gave the Wild Sheep Society of BC a chunk of change. You gave,
Pacific Salmon Foundation.
The Pacific Salmon Foundation. Yeah. Sorry. I was like, this went completely blank there for a second. Did you know, like, leading into the film, that was kind of a goal or?
Yeah. To be honest, probably not. like I think it's just so ingrained with us with like what our constant topics of conversation were. And like I said, like we always knew that, I don't know. I feel like a big reason we hunt is because we love animals and we love, like, I don't know. I think you talk to any hunter who's really in it. No one geeks out about animals more than us, right? Like we're the dudes that are pulling off on the side of the highway to go and see if we can see a sheep up there or anything like this. And I don't know, like even Grizz, right? You drive the freaking highway with this guy and you're like, dude, like you might need to like calm down here because we might get in an accident, dude. Like you're always just searching and you're just like such, I don't know. I just feel like us as hunters are always in such awe of these creatures that live with in a couple hours of us or a lot of us within our homes too, right? In different ways. So I feel like conservation goes hand in hand with that and really like the idea that we want to be able to preserve these species and we want to preserve their habitats and we want to do these different things so that my great grandkids can go and experience the same animals and get to experience us going out hunting and the brotherhood and everything else that comes along with that in so many different ways too, right? So I don't know. I think just with those constant topics of conversation and even chatting with Grizz too, and we knew like one thing that we always have said kind of especially going into 2024 is just trying to build community. We feel like Fargon's been given a little bit of a platform too, and we're like, hey, might as well use this to build community. And if we're going to gather people together, why wouldn't we try to get back to conservation and be able to, like I said, hopefully encourage people to even have a thought about that and be like, hey, you know what, like let's think about what it looks like to maybe donate some time or donate some funds and kind of what an impact that can make on people's lives too. So
no, that's cool. I'm just going to keep throwing big questions at you. I'm sorry.
Like I said, keep the questions coming, I guess.
Yeah. So when you talk about the giving back and, you know, the hunting and the fishing and the conservation, like, how do you believe sustenance is going to contribute to the broader conversation about hunting and fishing and foraging? Like, it's out there to the world now. I feel when I watched it, that's like, if you're talking to someone who's not in the hunting space, mm-hmm. like I feel your films now, you can reference, like, here, go check this out actually. And this is why we do Thank what you. We do like this.
Yeah.
So it's like, I want to know your thoughts on that though.
Hey, well, thank you for saying that. That's something that we were striving to do. So we're really stoked that that point kind of came across. I think it's a hard question to ask. You really are throwing the big balls over here, eh? What the heck? Like our hope really is to, like I said, branch the gap between maybe the people that don't necessarily partake in outdoor harvest and the people that do. And we want to give something that both people can obviously enjoy, but at the same time, we want to make a case in some ways. Not that everything's a debate, but we do want to make a case because we believe that this is the best way of living. And we think that obviously there should be rights around that, but we also think that there's a responsibility to also conserve these species too. And I think often hunters especially, fishers a little bit, but definitely hunters are not necessarily even given like the case to even maybe make an argument in some different way, shapes or forms. And I don't want to get too political about this because I might get boycotted by some people. But at the same time, it's like, hey, you know what? Like, I think, like I said, more than anything, us as hunters, like we're the guys that are on the side of the road, always checking out these different animals, and we truthfully love these species, and we want to be worried about conserving them, and we want our great grandkids to experience the same things, and we want to be able to harvest wild meat. I think that this is the best way for me to feed my family at the same time too, right? So I hope that through these films, even going back to what you're chatting about earlier about the passion, like this is stuff that we just truthfully on a personal level are passionate about, and we want to be able to make films for. And yeah, I hope that people can watch this and say that it makes a good case for hunters and say that it makes a good case for advocacy for conservation around that too. And hopefully make some change with that, or just makes people think about it too, right? So I think a lot of hunters too, it's like, I hope that through watching these films and hearing these stories and watching how a guy like Grizz lives his life, obviously I hope he can learn different hunting and fishing tactics, but I hope he also can get a little bit of his passion for why it's important to protect these species and why it's important to maybe spend some time, spend some cash if you're able to obviously donate to organizations like the Wild Sheep Society of British Columbia, who's dedicated to habitat protection. And hope it makes people think.
Yeah, no, that's a great answer for a loaded question.
Hey, you kind of got me off the cuff there. I'm not going to lie. I was like, oh, crap. Like I said, I hope I don't get any email or something off of that answer.
I had all these questions in my mind, and I was thinking about them a lot at work today, and I'm just like, you know what? He's either going to answer them well, or we're going to bomb this podcast. that's good. So what's next for Fargon? I know you've just launched a film, but
yeah,
you got to be planning.
Yeah. We're always planning. If I'm honest, I feel like what's next is maybe a nap. Like especially kind of around the film launch in the last couple of months. I know both Nick and I have definitely been pretty full on, even to just collaborating with everyone on the marketing side of things. Obviously for Nick, editing and cramming it into film, finish the film and host the premiere and do all these different things too that we're so stoked and thankful to do. But I think the boys are ready for a little bit of a nap here too. But I don't know, man. Like we're always open for business. Got a lot of fun commercial projects kind of on the go here coming up. Have a couple original films too that we filmed last year that will be jumping into the editing bay here as well. Some cool stories of some people who maybe used hunting to get through some hard life situations and use it kind of as a way to push through their lives. And that'll be a fun one, a little teaser drop in there that'll be coming out in a little bit here as well. But yeah, always on the lookout for new stories, always on the lookout for new brands to partner with. And yeah, we're excited for the future. It's an open book, but definitely some things we got in the go that I maybe can't talk too much about. But like I said, we're always open for business though too, if anyone wants to reach out.
So those other projects that you can't talk about, that sounds like a future podcast then.
Hey, well, we're definitely down, so always happy to chat.
So what's next? Not Far Gone Media, what's next for you? You got you're talking about wanting to do your own hunting. You got any plans for this season?
I would say there's two bucket list items that I'm hoping to make happen. For me, I would obviously love an archery bull elk, especially for my wife. She, we eat elk meat like almost every day, and the freezer's getting pretty empty pretty quick, if I'm honest. So an archery bull elk would be awesome. I actually did get about 4 or 5 days of hunting on the tail end of that double header elk trip and wasn't able to make anything happen. So that would be something that I would love to make happen personally. And then I guess just like a bucket list hunt, but I'm throwing this out here, but I feel like an archery bison would be something pretty awesome. So we'll always put in for the LEH and see if we can make something happen there too. So might as well throw it out and see if anything bites.
Well, there's open season for bison too. It's a lot harder.
I know. It's very true. And it's a lot colder. Well, actually, I don't think...
Oh, rumor has it there might be some... Yeah, that's true. Rumor has it there's some escape bison that got out this year, too. So, I don't know. They might have to open those up. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I believe they did for certain people already.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think that's kind of next for us is, like I said, especially this next year, I think both Nick and I want to take a little bit, like be maybe a touch more picky with the projects that we're taking on and really focus on deep, impactful stories and continuing to partner with brands that we believe in and establish lifelong relationships with those guys if we can. But then at the same time, too, also get on a lot of personal hunts. And I would say that bison one might be a little bit more in the future, but hopefully an archery elk is in my path here this next year. So I'll be trying pretty hard for that one.
You're getting that screaming match with the bull elk, and if you can bring him into bow range, that'll get the blood pumping for you.
Big time.
So for the people who don't know where to find you guys, where do we find Far Gone Media? How do we watch the film? How do we learn more about you guys? See what you're going on? Follow along?
Yeah. So you can find us on our website, fargonefilms.com. Find us on YouTube, which is Far Gone. Subsistence is live now. We're actually running a bit of a giveaway as well with that. So you can win everything from a pair of binos to a Go Hunt Essentials package, which is Insider and a bunch of other things, as well as some stuff from Savage too. So pretty awesome giveaway that we're kind of running in with the film launch as well. So that will actually be wrapping a day after this podcast gets out. So that'll be April 4th at noon. So be sure to comment on the film, subscribe to the Far Gone YouTube channel. And who knows, you might be winning a fresh set of binos and some other awesome stuff too. So, and other than that, Instagram, Far Gone, that's where you can find us. I'm personally Nolly Schneids. That being said, I think most of my time actually goes through the Far Gone page anyways, but always feel free to follow me and Nolly Schneids too.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I know the feeling on that one.
Yeah. Hey, but what about for you, Greg? You're like, what's this next year, like, hopes for you in regards to hunts and stuff? You got anything pretty epic on the agenda? Anything you maybe want the boys to follow you around with the camera with, or what are we talking here?
You know what? This is the first year I don't have a big trip planned since I was 10 years old.
Really?
I'm going to... Yeah, so this past year I had trip plan. We flew in for caribou, unsuccessful. Cool. Seen lots of animals, which was nice, just nothing legal. But I being new to the Prince George area, I want to spend my time this year hopefully establishing some close to home mule deer, whitetail, elk.
Heck yeah.
So it's just going to be getting out on the land and just figuring it out. If I get a draw for something, everything's out the window at that point, depending on what the draw's for, but
exactly.
It'll be the usual sheep, elk, if I get a Roosevelt draw, then, that will be it. If I get the Kamloops Lakes bighorn, that'll be it. But I'm not going to plan on them though. I'm just going to, fingers crossed and hope.
Exactly. Hey, I feel like that's all you can do, but hey, that sounds like a good time too, right? So that's going to feel like a big deep breath after since you're 10, having a big trip planned every year. So it's got to be fun to actually just explore the local spots here a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, most the last few, maybe 5-6 years, we've been doing a lot of northern exploring, like,
cool,
Dease, Chetwynd, Hudson Hope, those ways. But we were always moose and mule deer, so we are my mule deer spot. My dad had been hunting it since the 70s. You had to put in the work, but you didn't have to go to different regions and all over. You just had to hike mountains and just be willing to go where people don't want to go. But this isn't about
the truth. Sorry, I gotta shut up. Sorry. I just love asking questions. It's having way too much fun chatting with you.
It's all good. That's for when you launch the Far Gone podcast. No.
Yeah, exactly. Hey,
but I wanna
podcast is in the works, so who knows about that one?
Hey.
You didn't hear it from me, though.
You guys heard it here first. Yeah. But I want to thank you for your time and, willing to come on and what you're doing for conservation. And, we appreciate what you're doing and we love your vision. And just looking forward to seeing what you guys come up with next.
Hey, well, thanks so much for having me on. And honestly, thank you and you guys for everything you guys are doing over at the Wild Sheep Society. It's something pretty special, and I think we need more people like you, if I'm honest. So thank you for that, and just constantly putting animals on the right path here out in British Columbia. So thank you for that, and thanks for having us on. Obviously pumping the film, and excited to hear everyone's thoughts on subsistence as well. So go check it out on the Far Gone YouTube.